Hello and welcome back to How to Save the World podcast. My name is Tim Batt. I am a lowly, silly comedian in New Zealand who's trying to figure out what steps to take environmentally to make the biggest impact without changing my whole entire life. I'm joined by someone of an expert in this field, Waveney Worth.
Somewhat. I don't like that. I'm not going for official expert.
That's why I said somewhat.
Yeah, somewhat.
Take the edge
off. I like it. It's good. Just the everyday person, somewhat.
You went zero waste for a whole year. That's something.
That's not every day, is it? It's like
exactly.
A bit weird.
What are we talking about this episode, Waveney?
We are talking about fair trade, Tim.
Oh, good.
I think it's a goodie, eh? Fair
trade.
It is
a really good one, yeah.
And we've got with us, sitting nicely in the corner, we've got Pravin Swamy, Business Development Manager and Spokesperson for Fair Trade New Zealand, sitting with us.
Thank you. Hi, guys. It's nice to be here.
Hey, Pravin. Thanks for joining us, mate. Pleasure to have you in the studio.
Yeah, good to have you here. Your role's taken you all over the world, eh? And you've done lots of speaking throughout Australasia and in front of heaps of audiences.
I suppose my main role at Fairtrade is really around in the market, trying to support businesses and communities that want to engage with Fairtrade and make the switch.
Nice. Have you ever been speaking somewhere and they say, right, let's have a break, and then they take you off and it's just like regular biscuits and tea and coffee and
there's been a few times like that, actually, especially in the early days.
And then do people realize and give you that look of like,
well,
horror?
There was this one time that we had a producer over from Papua New Guinea as well, so we were taking him around the country visiting lots of local sort of communities, schools and churches and places, and talking about fair trade. And we got to this one place, I think it's down in Christchurch, that area, and they were saying, oh, you know, come in, a huge big crowd. We did a big speech and everyone was like, yeah, we're going to go fair trade. We're going to get into it.
Yeah.
And then we went out for a break and, you know, it was biscuits and instant coffee and not very nice instant coffee and definitely not fair trade. And we're just standing there, like, okay, we've got to chat. We've got to bring our product with us next time, you know. Yeah, yeah.
But, it's such a good example, though, of the sort of cognitive dissonance a lot of people have, though, right? Where you go like, yeah, absolutely. You see maybe a documentary or an ad on TV or some campaign, you're like, yeah, absolutely. And then, boom, it's just
so
out
of
your head
so
immediately.
Much of it.
Yeah. And I think that's so true, and especially when you're in the supermarket and you're going around doing your shopping. It is just go, go, go. You've got to get in there. You've got 20 minutes. You're running off with the kids or whatever. You've got other things going on that you're just going into automatic pilot a lot of the time. And it's trying to get people just to take that additional second just to remember what they learned or know about fair trade or organics or whatever it is and just make that conscious switch in that environment. And that is the challenge.
It's the mission.
Mission. One thing I used to think about fair trade was that it was like, oh, it's okay for like coffee and tea, but it's such a small, like you can't get a lot of fair trade stuff. And what about the other 90% of it? But I was just thinking about like today so far, like Tim, let's run this by you too. Have you had a coffee today?
Yes, I'm drinking one right now.
Have you had tea?
No.
Because you don't drink tea. Have you had a banana?
I have.
What else? Are you wearing cotton?
Yes.
Interesting, eh? And I'd have to answer yes for all of that too, but I'm the other way around with the tea and the coffee. I'm a tea girl.
So zoom that out a little bit.
So
is it in all likelihood I'm probably like,
well, because you actually offered Pravin a coffee before, just before we got going, and I was like, oh, is it fair trade? Is it? Is your coffee fair trade?
I don't think so. It's Cafe Lafare.
No, it wouldn't be. But you see, I think there are, and that's the thing with fair trade. It is about, you know, those kind of key things that we use every day. And actually, just going back to that point I was saying about the church groups, and after we did that sort of those events, and after we started realizing we've got to take our stuff with us.
So we always take
products with us to share or to have. And so that's why today I actually even brought you guys some fair trade chocolate.
A winner!
So you've got a mint chocolate here and a toasted hazelnut.
Oh my goodness! We'll rip into that in a second. What were they again? Mint chocolate always.
And toasted hazelnut. And this is from a little chocolate company called Bonetto down in Christchurch. Really great, great chocolate.
Amazing.
Yeah. And great packaging,
And great
to
packaging
Lovely
too.
Packaging.
Yeah. Before we go too far down the road, is it worth maybe, I would love for myself to find out what exactly is fair trade? What does it mean?
Yeah, sure.
How does it operate?
I mean, fair trade is, I think a lot of people, when they think about fair trade, they think about, you know, prices and sustainable price or fair prices for farmers. And that's that's kind of part of what fair trade's about. We work with smallholder farmers predominantly that grow the products that we enjoy eating and drinking every day. Things like coffee, cocoa, bananas, sugar, cotton was mentioned. All of those kind of agricultural commodities. And for the most part, those commodities aren't grown in New Zealand. They're grown offshore. So we want to make sure that, you know, those farmers in their communities, they're being treated fairly and getting a fair price. But in addition to the fair price, there's also other aspects of sustainability that we address around the environment. And we enable all of that, the social and the environmental sustainability, to be achieved through a fair price. You can't expect a community or anyone to go full hog and be sustainable without investing in them to enable them to do that. And that's kind of what fair trade does.
Yeah, I like that, because I was thinking about us consumers in the West, is that is probably the number one thing people will say. It's like, oh, I can't afford it. It's like, wow, man, if we're saying that, how can you expect a farmer, you know, that's on $2 a day or something to be able to afford to be sustainable?
And when we're talking about fair trade, we're not asking people to, you know, be spending heaps more. And often it's not even more than a conventional product, because, you know, the companies choose to absorb the additional cost and not pass it on to the consumer. But, you know, for the farmer, it's a small bit that ensures that the prices that they get cover their cost of sustainable production, and that there's another additional component, which is called the fair trade premium, which is like an additional sum of money that if it's a coffee community or coffee farmers, they will come together, they'll have an AGM, they'll have this collected fair trade premium from their fair trade sales, and they will decide what to invest that in as a community.
Wow.
And that could be initiatives around their businesses, improving how they run their businesses, transition to organic, for example. They'll work around maybe initiatives in the community, if it's healthcare and education for their children, or investing in the future. So
does that operate a little bit differently depending on where you go, or is the money always held effectively in trust so that the fair trade farmers can get together and make a decision?
Yeah, the model of fair trade is about it's about transparent supply chain, from where the product, where you see the blue and green fair trade mark on the product, that's your assurance that it's gone through that fully transparent supply chain. Mm. Our role as fair trade is not to dictate to farmers what to spend their fair trade premium on.
Yeah.
It's just to enable them to have the right structure to be democratically organized, which has many benefits for the community. Enables them to sell their product on better terms as well. And then in addition to that, we're just ensuring that when they get their premiums, that they're sitting down in an AGM, as a cooperative in an AGM, they'll have their AGM and they'll put forward ideas that they want to spend their premium on. They'll vote on it, and then those will get carried through. And we're just there to make sure that happens.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Hmm.
Yeah.
And you work for Fair Trade, the organization, because I guess it's probably worth noting, what is the organization that is called Fair Trade New Zealand?
Yeah. So
what
it's
is like the principle of Fair Trade?
Yeah. So there's,
yeah, good call.
Yeah. So there's the concepts and the principles, or the philosophy of fair trade. And then there's the organization, us as fair trade. We're a kind of a member organization of many different national fair trade offices. And we're Fair Trade Australia, New Zealand. And then we've got sort of offices in the producing areas, looking after the producers as well. So as a collective of all of these offices, we're either supporting, pushing fair trade in the market, or supporting fair trade producers in origin.
That's so cool.
Yeah.
What I love about this is, like, it's a big shortcut.
What do you mean?
Well, like, you're walking around the supermarket, you're around the shops, and there's so many components of buying a product you want to keep an eye on. It's you know, the sustainability thing. Is the farmer getting a fair price? Is this being met?
Mm.
Is the
it community is a big being shortcut, looked after? Isn't it?
It's like, oh, it's got that sticker on it, yeah, so yeah. I, like, can just...
Is that certification?
It's such a good system.
I reckon, because I'm always saying that consumers are really powerful, and as I think of consumers as like the queen sitting on top of it all, controlling the kingdom, because, you know, if we don't buy it, they don't make it, so we drive the entire thing. But I was thinking about it a bit more, and just thinking about this episode, and I was like, really? I do agree with myself.
That's good.
But it's actually more like we are a blinded queen sitting in a bank vault. Like, it's just like...
This metaphor just got so complex.
Next level.
Okay, walk me through
it. Well, it's just like, sure, you might be genuinely the one that can call the shots and dictate what happens out there, but you don't have visibility of it.
Yes.
You were completely blinded.
Just and because you want to act in a certain way doesn't mean you've got the ability to.
Well, no, no. No, you don't. You do have the ability, but because that's what I mean about that. This is, I've just realized it. I thought it was really, I thought it was gold, but it's gold plate.
Just walk me through it. Sometimes it takes me a moment or two.
Let's just keep calm, everyone. Get through the analogy.
You did say a blinded queen in a bank vault, right?
I did say. Okay. Because it's like she's still the queen. She still has the power. Doesn't gotcha. Matter whether you can see or not, you've still got the power. So I'm not making any concession there. It's just around that we have the power, but we can't see what's going on.
Oh, it's her bank vault.
Sure. Yeah. I hadn't. Yeah. So what I'm meaning is that, like you were saying, fair trade's a great shortcut in the supermarket. It's kind of like it's an opportunity when you can't see what's going on. Let's say if it doesn't have that certification on it. What do you call it? Like regular. Conventional, what do you call it?
Yeah, if it's just a conventional product, yeah, or if there's another ethical claim okay. tagged to something. Yeah.
You should rebrand that. You should call stuff that isn't fair trade bad. Bad trade products. Yeah. There's fair trade products and there's bad trade products.
Okay. Yeah. I imagine Mr. Fairtrade can't make an official statement.
Yeah, Pravin's not allowed to take silly suggestions nice back ball. To the bank.
But it's like, so it's an opportunity for us as consumers where, sure, we have the power, but we don't know what's going on. So it's an opportunity to sort of take that blindfold off and go, okay, sure, I don't know what's going on with all of these products, but this is the only one where I can see, where I do know what's going on.
And to your point there, Wave, I think it's, which is kind of, couple of things. What we always say at Fairtrade is, you know, we're here to, you know, to do the homework for you. That's our role as Fairtrade, you know.
Because I hate homework.
Everyone hates homework, right? Homework. And you don't want companies to be doing their own homework.
No.
You know, you want someone independent to be checking it.
I've always been looking for life hacks with sustainability. You cannot ask a consumer to sit in a supermarket with their phone out researching stuff.
And that's not going to happen. So for us, it's about, you know, giving consumers that assurance that that's been done. Mm. And for us also is like, you know, we open ourselves up to scrutiny as well. So there's been hundreds of studies that have been done on fair trade by, you know, different academic institutes and research institutes. And, you know, from time to time we sit there and we go through all of this, hundreds of bits of research and work out how can we improve what we're doing? What things are working within fair trade? What things need improving?
Mm. Can you share anything that's been identified that has had to change?
There's been things like I think some of the things around how we work as an issue when we started at Fairtrade was it was led very much by the consumer markets driving what Fairtrade should look like. And over the last sort of 4 or 5 years, probably 5 years now, we've transitioned to a model where, you know, the producers are actually sitting on our international board.
Great.
And they're part owners of the Fairtrade system. So they're driving the agenda.
Oh, wow. Awesome.
And that's kind of one of those things that, you know, comes up in the research, saying how do you empower the producer's voice even more?
Yeah.
You know, not just that within their community, but also at an international level. How do you open the, you know, the opportunities to them? And that's one of the things that we took those kind of recommendations on, and, you know, different things that have come back to us, and, you know, we move forward. And on balance, all the kind of research, when we do sort of periodic reviews of all the research that's out there, we find on balance, you know, fair trade is still, you know, really highly regarded. And
it's doing what it's setting out to do.
And it's doing what it's setting out to do and improving as we go along.
Actually, on that, I was looking at the Wikipedia fair trade article, and which is enormous, by the way. It's the biggest one I've ever seen. And at the top, there's this little recommendation that says, perhaps we could split this one up. But it's, anyway, right at the top, it says, and I just wanted your comment on this, Pravin, bringing it back to the links between fair trade and sustainability. Buying products from producers in developing countries at a fair price is a more effective and efficient way of promoting sustainable development than traditional charity and aid. Do you agree with that? You think they've got that right?
I think it's a very, what I like about fair trade, and I think this is what speaks to what you're saying there, and what you've identified on Wikipedia, is that, you know, fair trade is about empowering the producer. You know, it's not us we're not going in and saying to the producer, okay, you need this and this project, and here's the money, we'll give it to you, and, you know, or we'll implement it for you. We want the ideas to come from the producers. We want them to enable them to see what needs to be done in their communities to achieve sustainability and to help them on that journey. But it needs to come from them, because when they're on board and they're invested, that's when you know those investments that they make have durable long-term outcomes.
Okay, so what you're saying is that where it's saying that they're basically saying for a consumer to buy, fair trade is more effective than traditional charity and aid. And you're saying, yes, that's true, because when you buy fair trade, you're empowering the farmers to make those choices themselves.
Mm. There's always a role for aid and charity.
Of course,
because there's always needs that go above and beyond, you know, the day-to-day.
And what the market can provide.
There's disaster relief. There's all of these kind of things where, you know, charity plays a very important role. But what we're talking about is changing the underlying way that we do trade and you know, readdress the balance in there, ensure that the farmer has more of a say in that, more power within that, within the trading system.
Because I think what your average person may not realise is if they've just gone off and bought themselves a conventional chocolate bar.
Bad trade. Carvin's not allowed to say it, but we're allowed to say
it. Yeah, we can say it. Unfair trade.
Not fair trade.
Yeah. So you've just gone, like, you've just popped, you know, you've filled your car up with petrol and you've just wandered in and you've grabbed yourself a chocolate bar and then you think to yourself, oh, look, I might donate to the Save the Elephants Fund or whatever, and you're not seeing that actually those two things are in tension with each other, you know, that they're kind of almost opposed. Those two actions are almost opposing each other, and that goes back to that sort of blindfolded thing where we can't see the consequence of that action. So do you want to talk us through what some of those implications might be? I know that we can't say this is definitely what's happening when you buy a conventional chocolate bar, but do you want to talk us through sort of on average what are you releasing with that action? What's happening overseas when you actually just buy your regular conventional chocolate bar?
Yeah, and let's talk about maybe chocolate as we're talking about chocolate. That's obviously the thing that's very close to many people's hearts and stomachs.
Yeah.
But, you know, for us in cocoa, when we started, it was all a really, you know, shocking stuff that's happening. 70% of the cocoa that we consume comes from West Africa, from Ghana and Ivory Coast. And in those communities, in those countries, there is a lot of challenges around child labor predominantly. I think it was back in 2010, there was an expose, a documentary that, you know, went into Ghana and, you know, found instances of, you know, trafficked labor and child labor being used on farms to produce cocoa, because the value that the farmers were getting from harvesting the cocoa themselves was not sustainable. Mm-hmm. So they had to find ways to, you know, make it work. And unfortunately, one of the ways you do that, the shortcuts are you bring in cheaper labor. But then it was really, you know, it was traffic labor and forced labor that was happening. And
so you're saying this is...
This was back in 2010 in Ghana.
Okay. Yep.
And there were two senators in the US, I think Harkin and Engel, two US senators, and they saw this documentary and they went about setting up a protocol with the cocoa industry in the US to eliminate and to, you know, to force the companies to take action to make sure there's no child labor in their supply chains. And everyone kind of signed up to this. It was a voluntary and symbolic protocol, and everyone signed up. This was back in 2010. And from 2010, they've revisited it a number of times to see how they're making progress against that. And then I think it was back in 2015, I think they went back out to Origin and they did more surveys and, you know, worked through the analysis to see what's happened. And what they'd seen is that child labor had actually gone up.
Wow.
So from about 1.8 million children working in cocoa in those countries to 2.2.
What happened? What went so wrong?
What happened? Well, the industry just
consumer demand, like, as in we're just eating more chocolate now. And
it could be that, but it's also what is also happening is that the underlying issue of you know, farmers' sustainable incomes and livelihoods has not been addressed.
So it was these senators were sort of setting out a bunch of voluntary rules to say, hey, don't do this, but there was kind of no, like, reward for following it. There was no incentive to actually.
It was all—it's all voluntary, but I suppose the stick in all of that was, you know, they would move to enforce or enact legislation to put that into force.
But there was nothing being provided to the farmers to actually go, you know,
you've got these cocoa farms which are not highly profitable the way they're running at the moment, to the point where you're sort of trafficking human beings to work in them. But yeah, we're not going to provide any more resources to you, but we need you to
give us more chocolate
your practices.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's that kind of thing of how do you enable people to change when you're not you're not addressing the underlying issues?
Yeah.
You know, and so for us with Fair Trade, we're, you know, we go in and we'll audit cocoa farms. That's part of what we do. And, you know, where we find it, if we find instances of, you know, child labour, we move swiftly to ensure that, you know, the children are safe in those situations. We take them out. We make sure they get the right support. And then we work on a program to actually educate and train the farmers to, you know, change those practices. But then we also make sure that we're ensuring that there's, you know, fair prices and premiums and schools and education and access to services to enable those communities to have choices that don't rely on their children going off and working in the farms, so that they can actually go to school. They can, you know, they can have different outcomes in life.
It's like buying fair trade is an opportunity to align your purchases with your values.
Hmm. It's like for us, the markets, it's a certification mark, but it represents, it's a development model. It's a tool for development in these communities, you know. Mm. Sustainable development as well.
Can you give like a bit of a broad picture of in 2019, how much of this stuff that would be on our supermarket shelves is fair trade versus not? Like, is this a tiny slither that is seeking the certification?
Since I started, this is about 12, 13 years ago doing fair trade. I was in there on day two. So pretty much, you know, what we had at that time was a little bit of coffee. And I think we sold in the first year maybe 200,000 kilos of fair trade.
In New Zealand.
In New Zealand, yeah. And from that, you know, year on year, we've built the awareness of the fair trade mark, going from about 20% up to now it's about 78% recognition amongst Kiwis. And also the sales of fair trade have grown, and it's gone from coffee to cocoa to bananas, tea, and then cotton products as well. And we estimate, I think it was last year, it's probably in excess of $110 million in retail sales. So that if you're looking on your coffee, if you're going in the supermarket looking on your coffee shelf, you've been maybe between 10-15% of the brands there'll be fair trade options in there on average.
Another big thing I've noticed as a consumer is that it's shifted where it is, you know, physically. You know how it used to be like right at the bottom where your ankles were?
In the hippie aisle.
Yeah.
You'd have to like really go and look for it.
Yeah, yeah. And now, it maybe it depends where you shop a bit too, but there it's often right at eye height, some fair trade options.
And that's kind of what we're about mainstreaming the concept of fair trade, making it accessible to everyone, because that's where you can really make a lot of impact for producers as well, through the premiums and those kind of things I was talking about.
Mm. I'm not sure how much you'll be able to answer this question, because you're obviously going to be a bit biased being from fair trade, but are there companies who are doing a good job in spite of not seeking or having the certification? They've kind of got other ways of
other models of sustainability. Of doing their own sustainability. I'm sure there are, you know. I think if I try and take my fair trade hat off, you know, if you are a consumer and you're supporting other companies that are doing their own versions of sustainability, just maybe ask yourself the questions of, you know, how are the farmers benefiting from this transaction, you know. What evidence or proof are they providing us, you know?
Because it's so easy to tell a story. It really is.
It's
anyone can make a spin. Like, you've got some general sort of principles. It might be, you know, a nice brown paper bag looking product, or putting the word green in your title, or natural, or local. And then you can just throw in some adjectives. And I can't tell the difference myself half the time.
And you know, they run off, take a few pictures of some happy farmers, whatever, and they've painted a story
for you. It's pretty difficult to, as a consumer, to tell the difference between something legit and just someone who's gone, look, I don't want to change my basic business model, but I really do want this section of the market, so I'm just going to say that we've given, and you know, legit stuff, like maybe give some funds to a local school so some of the local children can go to school, but it doesn't change any baseline issues.
So I'm, you know, and I'm all up for companies doing more, because that's kind of what we want to also achieve in fair trade. Is, you know, it's about shifting everyone's ways of working, you know. But yeah, I mean, even for me, like when I sit and I look at websites and what companies are doing, I have to, it takes me time to work through.
Work it out. And you're an expert. Not like a somewhat one, but like a real one.
Yeah, I try to be. Well, maybe I'm a somewhat.
Aspiring.
I'm a wannabe. but no, that is the reality, and it's it does take time, you know.
So it's a really good question, Tim, because it's like I really want to encourage those businesses that are on that journey too. And of course, there's so much that people can do without sort of getting over an official line.
It's like the eggs thing. Back when I was eating eggs, the whole thing of free range is so hard to determine. I always look for the SPCA tick, but I don't even know what.
I think that's a good mark to look for. And I think it's quite interesting because, you know, when I started, you know, doing this, like fair trade was a relatively unheard of concept. You know, Kiwis didn't really get it, but broadly around ethical and, you know, sustainable consumption, there wasn't really a lot going on.
And we're talking the last 10 years.
In the last 10 years.
So much has happened.
And so much has changed. And I think, you know, companies are rushing to, you know, do things in this space. And I think the law and the regulation is catching up. You know, it's always one step behind what's happening in the market. And I think that does lead it to being these kind of situations where you've got, you know, the risks of, you know, is that a free range, natural, or what does natural mean?
Organic,
organically grown.
That's right.
Or is it organic certified?
Yeah, apparently they're just bringing out some legislation around the word organic.
That, you know. In Europe, it's way, we're, you know, 20, 30 years ahead in that regard. So they're quite stringent around the legislation.
Oh, Europe are?
Yeah.
Like they've got rules around this.
What you can use, what ethical claims you can make or environmental claims, and you must be able to substantiate them in, you know.
So what we're coming down to, probably wherever you are in the world, but particularly in New Zealand, based on what you've just said then, certification is the big, like, not the adjectives or the look of the packaging, but it's something that's really genuine.
And just to tack on to that, do you think there's some certifications that exist as a bit of a rot? Like, are there some who are taking the piss?
I mean, there are, even within certification marks, there's been a huge proliferation of those as well.
Yeah.
You know, there's hundreds of them.
This is the point where people just weep. Just give up.
It's quite like cat and mouse, right? Because if consumers are like, oh, okay, cool. So third-party certification is the thing that will help me.
Or even marks that look like their certification.
I was just about to say that. They just, like the company themselves has actually just made up a little star thing that they've chucked on. But I mean, it's not that hard in some regards, because you've got your fair trade certification and organic certification, and there's like BioGrow certification. Those would be the three.
And then
you can add to that as you get more proficient. But it's like you could just make that start.
And for us as fair trade, and also organics as well, there's umbrella organisations for organic, which is IFOAM. So, you know, they kind of keep all the organic certification bodies to an international sort of standard and benchmark. And even within, our certification is around a kind of sustainability and sustainable development sort of certification. So even within what we do, there are others that are all part of ISIL, which is a kind of an international organization of standard setters.
So they stuck with that name, huh?
ISIL, yeah. It's kind of
like, well, we've got it now.
But, you know, what they do is they're there to make sure that all of the certification labels are, you know, maintaining their standards and their transparency and their openness, so they hold us to account as well. So
there's a lot of governing bodies sort of keeping checks and balances on everyone else, keeping everyone accountable that it's all on the up and up.
But you know, you're right though. There is a proliferation of labels out there, and I think consumers just need to be just that little bit more aware of that kind of stuff.
In the interest of some conclusion to the awful story before about West Africa, is there any positive news now, like in the fact that there was an increase in child labourers who are working on those plantations? Is there any indication now that information is out there that maybe that's...
I mean, I think the...
Doesn't sound like it.
No. There has been some progress in that space. The World Cocoa Foundation, which represents a lot of the international sort of cocoa, chocolate companies, and big brands, they kind of come together and they recognize that that's one issue that's happening in cocoa. But the other one is deforestation, because there's a lot of deforestation to kind of grow cocoa as people kind of move off into other areas and encroaching on these, you know, reserved national parks and all this kind of stuff. So they really want to put a stop to that and try. They're pushing to kind of get companies to be more sustainable as well. They've got different initiatives that they're working on. And we've been talking to them about, you know, the need for living incomes, you know, and we did a review of our own sort of pricing structure to make sure that we're kind of keeping current with what's required for producers. And we're realizing that we've got sustainable pricing, but we wanted to go to kind of living incomes, you know, move to that next level to ensure that, you know, the household has a living income. So for us, we're kind of talking about what we're here and we need to raise our fair trade minimum prices and our premiums by X amount over.
And do you know how to do that without losing consumers because it suddenly becomes that much more expensive?
Yeah, it has to be a conversation, and you can't just suddenly enforce that in the next day, because you'll lose consumers and you'll lose companies as well, because it's a huge price hike that you know would need to happen. But you need to kind of start having the conversations,
keep applying the pressure,
educating and sharing that information.
I think it's conversations like this that take it from like, oh, that's a nice thing that you're doing, to, oh, I hadn't realized if I'm not doing that, then actually I'm, you know, party to all this crazy stuff that doesn't align with my
values. That's me right now, sitting in this chair talking to you guys. I'm like, brother. Oh man, I need to change my shops a little bit.
And ultimately, what we say with fair trade, but we're not asking consumers, you know, to pay a whole lot more. It's very often, if there is anything you pay a little bit, it's a fraction more, and that can make a huge difference, because when you're talking about the volume, it becomes a huge impact at origin.
Here's a question as well, because I as we're talking, I'm just like mentally going through my grocery shop going, okay, which products does the fair trade certification apply to? Just like certain foods? So for example, we've mentioned sort of bananas is a big one, and sugar and cocoa and coffee and tea, I'm assuming, as well. But so like, for example, this is kind of a niche one, but there's the stuff I eat now because I've gone vegan, which I'm not sure if it's 100% vegan, but it's called corn. It's made of corn. It's spelt with a Q. Process it, so it kind of tastes like meat.
Yeah.
So it sort of tastes like mince. But for these weird sort of other products that aren't quite like huge mass market, you know, top traded commodity style of product, should those sorts of products also be seeking fair trade certification, or is this really just for super widely traded goods?
Those are the ones that I've mentioned, are the ones, the kind of the big ones in fair trade. But we have a whole list of standards that apply to lots of different products. What's corn?
Corn's made of corn. It's made of corn, and they've got some process that they've patented, I think, that they put it through. So they process it up, and it makes the consistency of like mince, and then if you add a bunch of herbs to it, you can kind of get away with thinking it's
meat.
Actually meat. Yeah, really good in spag bowl.
Yeah, there you go. I have to give that a go. But I mean, yeah, just we do have a whole bunch of standards that cover different kind of commodities. But our focus is always around developing countries.
Yeah, because where's corn grown? Not necessarily the tropics.
It might be here.
It might be from the US or somewhere like that. So that probably wouldn't be.
Oh, that's an interesting. So I didn't realize that as well. So these are commodities that have been grown in developing nations.
There's that correlation between developing and tropical.
Yeah. And for us, the reason why we focus on the developing countries, because those farmers, they often don't have the kind of government support or the infrastructure.
Sure.
That could be there to protect them or support them.
They need another big organization.
They need something else. And that's what fair trade can help them with.
Does the fair trade organization that you're part of have a goal to basically like take over the world, as it were, to like shift eventually sort of everything to this?
I think always, like within fair trade, the aspiration is to make ourselves redundant.
Yeah.
Ultimately, you know, that everyone's doing the right thing by producers, and there is no need for fair trade. That's always the aspiration, but you know, we've still got a long way to go. I mean,
how is it progressing? Like in real terms, you mentioned before that there's year on year, there's definitely progress that you're seeing, that the numbers of, you know, fair trade chocolate per kg in New Zealand's going up and up. But how good is the rate of change? How fast is it going?
How hopeful are you?
How hopeful?
Yeah.
Be honest.
Yeah. I think like in for cocoa, like in West Africa, I think maybe about 5 or 7% of all cocoa is fair trade at the moment. which is small. Mm. But, you know, we're hopeful that we can continue to grow that.
Because you're going in the right direction, right? Yeah, in terms of your size, it's actually rapid expansion and growth.
It's been good growth, since the last 20 to 30 years that we've been doing. But, yeah, we just need to kind of continue to find ways to... Also, it's also about adapting to the issues as well, because not only is it the fundamental issue of price that affects farmers, because, you know, they're kind of tied to international market prices, which fluctuate, and that they're not in control of. So, you know, they may, for a coffee farmer, they may start off at the beginning of the year, grow their crop, knowing, investing X amount of money into doing that. And then at the end of the year, when they come to harvest and sell the coffee, the international market price has dropped below the cost of production, you know. So that's the key thing that's always there. And that's there again in coffee at the moment, because the international price has dropped right down. But then there's also other issues. There's climate, which is affecting a lot of producers, coffee in particular, you know. The coffee plants are very susceptible to small changes in temperature. So even like a 2 to 3 degree change can completely decimate a crop.
Ooh, climate change world without coffee.
And yeah, we did a report on this. So this is part of the advocacy that we try and do, is we pulled together a lot of research and did a report on coffee and climate. And now the key outcome was, I think by 2050, if we carry on the way we're going, there'll be no coffee. It'll be extinct.
There'll be no coffee.
Yeah. Yeah, and that made the headlines. That was the thing that got everyone going, right.
Yeah.
You know, and then there was a bit of news that got generated from that.
Hey, while we've got your attention, news, there was also 2 million child workers on the farms.
So yeah.
In terms of how far it can go, Europe's doing pretty well, right? Like, I've heard that some very conventional, like, say, for example, Kit Kat, just their standard Kit Kat bar over there, has got the We Fair Trade certification on it, because that's what consumers demanded.
Yeah.
I don't know how widespread that is, but, like, we're not there yet. But to know that sort of,
we reacted hugely to the, because we've talked about this in another episode, but the whole Cadbury episode with the palm oil thing.
Yeah.
They got, I'm not like defending a company that, you know, has bad practices or anything, but they really got singled out by New Zealanders, and it became a big sort of media story for a long time, and I think really hurt them as a company.
Yeah.
So like, that gives me hope in a way that if we can find the right buttons to push, New Zealand does have a desire to do the right thing, and
I think Kiwis do intuitively have that kind of sense of giving someone a fair go, you know. That's kind of in the Kiwi sort of mindset and way of things. That's what I've come to learn being an English guy, you know, coming over here 15 years ago and kind of getting my head around it all. But I do feel that Kiwis do genuinely want to do the right thing and give people a fair go. It's just kind of giving them the tools to enable them to do that. But yeah, I mean, just to your point on cocoa and cocoa companies, you know, a lot of them are, you know, especially in light of everything that's happening in West Africa, making bolder commitments around, you know, sustainable sourcing, which is a great start. And, you know, hopefully we can help those companies be part of that solution. So that's, for us, is a big one. And also looking at, you know, the new emerging markets of where will coffee be consumed and cocoa be consumed. And it's all in the Asian countries, which, you know, historically went into sugary treats and drank tea, are now looking at coffee and chocolate and everything else like the rest of the world. So, you know, what can we do in those markets to ensure that, you know, that there's a growing class, a middle class in those markets as well, that will be prepared to pay to do the right thing.
Do you get a sense if they're like culturally receptive to
those
sorts of principles of fairness and like we have in New Zealand, as you mentioned, sort of giving people a fair go in there? I take it it's probably not everywhere in the world is exactly the same in that regard. In these emerging markets in Asia, are they?
It's quite interesting, because I was reading a bit of market research on China, actually, and a lot of the consumers there are buying things online. They do a lot of shopping online, and they will actually take the time to research those companies online and, you know, check out what's behind those companies and what they do. So they are more, especially the affluent sort of middle class, they're more tuned into that. And they do want, you know, they see a lot of environmental impacts in their own sort of communities and cities and stuff, and they want to do the right thing. They're inspired to change.
Is there a country in particular, do you think, that's been like the most positively affected by the fair trade regime? Is there like a real success story out there of a particular nation or...
Do you mean on the consumer side or the producer side?
The producer side, yeah.
We, I would say like in a lot of the sort of Latin American countries, they're doing a lot of coffee. And that's kind of where the model of fair trade started and the concepts of, I think it was the Guatemalan farmers where, you know, there was a priest in Europe who went over to Latin America and he saw this community of farmers who were working and not getting paid a lot. So he decided to bring their coffee back to Europe, you know, repackage it and put his own label on there and say, look, I've paid them a fair price. And that the whole concept of fair trade kind of started there. And they've always been, they've embraced it. It's spread a lot wider in that region. I don't know. I wouldn't say there was one particular country I could single out, but they benefit a lot from coffee and what's sold as fair trade, and also bananas as well.
Guatemala's interesting for that because I've been lost in this Wikipedia hole for a few times over the years. But the like CIA coup where they took over Guatemala on behalf of like was it the United Fruit Company?
Yeah,
they like staged a coup against the democratically elected leader because he wanted to basically nationalize the banana trade.
Wow.
And they're like, we're not having it. So they deposed him and installed a new guy so they could keep their cheap priced bananas coming into the States.
Wow.
And that, so like, yeah. And that was in the '50s, I think.
And you know, I think the US have had influence in a lot of those kind of Central Latin American. And that's the whole concept of, you know, banana republics. That's where all that kind of comes about. Yeah.
And just quickly to sort of round off, and at least Wavina, you got some stuff you want to throw in at the end as well. We end every episode getting some quick tips, but like I'm really interested just in your personal journey to working for this organization. How did that come about?
Well, it's a personal thing actually, because I'm originally, although I sound like I am from the UK because I've got an English accent, but originally I'm from Mauritius. My parents are, and my family background is around sugar farming. So we were kind of smallholder sugarcane farmers. So, you know, from the stories I've heard from my grandfather, that's they've been passed down. I know all about the hardships of, you know, what it takes to...
Wow, to that's grow, so direct.
Sugar. Yeah,
it's
yeah.
just like one generation.
So my father was actually working in the sugarcane fields when he was a kid.
Wow.
He'd go to school and then go and help out on the family farms. And he would tell all the stories of, you know, what had passed before. So... I grew up in the UK, so I didn't see that firsthand, but, you know, it stayed with me and I thought, well, you know, what can I do to change that? And then while I was growing up at school and this concept of fair trade started to come out and did my university studies and thought, all right, I've got to go and find something in that field. And yeah.
Mm.
So have you been working in this field your sort of entire adult life since you got out of uni?
I studied international business management science, so quite a commercial from a commercial perspective, but it plays quite nicely into what the kind of conversations I have with commercial companies here.
You can talk the business talk.
Try and frame it up in a way that kind of speaks to what they want to achieve as well, the shared objectives are. But then I finished my university studies and I traveled a bit around Europe, and that's where I met my wife, who was a Kiwi, who brought me out here.
Ah, now it's making sense.
Yeah, and I was doing a bit of sort of volunteer work for fair trade organisations in Europe, and then also I was teaching at a university as well. So a bit of something completely different. But then I came here, and the fair trade office had literally just opened. It was like a few months before, and
meant to be.
You know, I was from the UK. I knew a bit about what had been before. Mm. So. And there were a lot of English people actually working at Fairtrade in the beginning. It's changed a lot now. It's a lot of Kiwis now.
It's stood the test of time.
Yeah, I've stood the test of time.
I'm glad they're locally sourcing the people now as well.
Yes, we are. We are.
It's good to hear.
Pravin, what I'm interested in is what you would say to our listeners who perhaps aren't buying Fairtrade right now.
Yeah.
But after listening to this, considering it.
For example, let's call that listener Tim. Just, you
yeah,
know, just, for example.
It's a generic Tim name.
Tim, I'd say to Tim, you know, expand your the foods you eat to beyond vegan a little bit. No. Vegan's fine. No problem with vegan. But complement it with fair trade bananas, you know, coffee, tea, chocolate. Those are the ones that you can always do in your weekly shop.
Those are the quick wins.
And if you want to go a bit further, go and look for sort of... I mean, I also encourage when it comes to clothes and things. I do a bit of, you know, op shopping from time to time. I like to do... And I don't go out shopping that often. But, you know, you could also look for sort of fair trade organic clothing as well.
Will we find the label on the clothes?
You just see
the fair trade logo.
It'll be stitched in, yeah.
Oh, great.
Yeah. So we've got a few brands also on our website. We've got a few brands that do that.
We check you out online.
Yeah.
What's your website?
Fairtrade.org.nz.
Great.
Yeah, just check that out. But I just, you know, I say go out and just do that. Look in your workplaces as well. See what you can do at work. See if you can get them to change some of those key things at work as well. And if you don't see something or you've got a brand that you love, just write to them or, you know, give them a little nudge and tell them to that you're keen on fair trade, because consumer pressure is really powerful.
It really is.
I just noticed the fantastic fair trade chocolate you brought in is vegan.
There you go.
It says it right there on the pack, so I can actually eat it.
It was meant to be.
That's incredible.
It was meant to be.
And just to really beat people over the head with it, because we always like to leave them on, you know, what is the one action you can take away from this? The logo is very identifiable. It is a black square. It says fair trade at the bottom, and it's got a green and a blue sort of swirl.
Yeah, we call him he's like a yin yang, but he's a waving farmer.
And if you don't, you probably know what it looks like already, but if you don't, just go to fairtrade.org.nz and you'll see it, and then look for that in your supermarket. I certainly will from now on, because this has been a good guilt trip for me, which is what you need from time to time. That's fantastic. Thank you so much for coming in and
no worries, absolute pleasure. It's a pleasure to be here. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Robin.
Cheers.